This afternoon, we'll continue with the state of government operations. The first department we will continue on is Community and Regional Affairs, Commissioner Designee, Mr. Hoffman. We're looking towards municipal entitlements and the basic department programs. So if you want anybody with you, you may have your staff with you also.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to proceed today with the same process I followed on Tuesday, in which I'll be here to answer policy questions, and I have a division director to answer detailed technical questions. Marty Rutherford is the director of the Division of Municipal and Regional Assistance. I would like to proceed today by discussing that division first, and then discussing the Administrative Services Division and also the Housing Assistance Division. These are the three divisions that are scheduled for today. I'd like to begin by having Marty review briefly the activities of her division and the budget of that division.
Thank you. Chairman Adams, ladies and gentlemen, MARAD is, as most of you know, the division that works with incorporated and unincorporated communities. We assist them with local government problems, planning activities, and with specific programs. MARAD has 8 offices around the state to deliver these functions. And the program specifics are the AMCSA 14C3 program, the Municipal Land Trust B program, the Local Boundary Commission staff, both the support and analysis group. We also include the State Assessor's Office, and that program, that section has in it the Senior Citizen Homeowners and Rent and Rebate programs. We manage approximately 300 legislative grants, the Rural Development Assistance Grant Program. We work with communities we assist them with the coastal zone management programs. And we provide the state revenue sharing and municipal assistance programs around the state. There are just a couple of changes that are very significant within this division's programs this year. There have been some significant cuts to the state revenue sharing and municipal assistance programs. From the revised fiscal year 87, they have each sustained a 20% cut this year, which lowers municipal assistance to about a $52 million level and state revenue sharing to about a $38 million level. The operating budgets of the division have sustained, the different components have sustained different percentages of cuts. But I'd say overall, between the approved fiscal year 87 budget and the fiscal year 88 request, it's approximately a 15% cut. Additionally, within DCRA's or MARAD's budget is the operating budgets of the operating grants that the legislature has seen fit to provide to specific entities around the state. It was decided that the department would actually zero out all of those grants this year in an effort to allow the governor and the legislature an opportunity to decide what was significant and what should be added back in. The governor did add back in 3 grants specifically, though, that he did feel significant, and that's what you'll see before you at this time in the operating grants, and that's Alaska Special Olympics for $72,000, the Rural Airport Assistance Program for $38,200, and Alaska Legal Services for $475,000. I think that's about all that's significant within our grant, our actual line items. The homeowners and renters program, as you probably, I know you discussed on Monday, they have both been zeroed out. And if you have any more specific questions, we'll try to answer them.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where is the grant that you just referred to? What item of the budget is that? Is that in under designated grants?
Yes, it's in designated grants.
Okay. That was a total of
585.5 that's there.
And that is a correct total?
I believe that is. Yes, I believe that. So last year it was in fiscal year 87 authorized, it was 920.7. The fiscal year 87 revised was 941.5, and now currently it's before you as 585.5, and that is the total of those 3 grants I mentioned earlier.
And the legal services grant, block grant or whatever, that's the same total as last year's?
I think it is 475. I believe that's what it was.
It is 475. You've got three
Thank
grants.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The three grants that you have listed, is there any other grants that you have within the CRA budget?
No, there are not.
Only three. You have a grants division, which is listed on page number 56, with 11 people.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. But if we don't, if we only had three, then we might as well zero out the grants administration and take over those services under administrative services.
I misunderstood. We only have three that were operational grants. We have approximately 300 open legislative grants that are to communities and sometimes they're to designated entities.
Now, municipal assistance. That particular law says the legislature may fund up to 30%. If you took 30% of the corporate and petroleum taxes today, you may fund approximately $35.2 million. Yet in your budget, you are funding approximately $52.7 million. What is going to be the policy of the administration for future? I don't mind that you're taking 20% this year. Are you going to take 20% next year until you reach that particular formula?
At this point, Mr. Chairman, there hasn't been a policy. This is something that we're discussing, and one of the goals of the administration is to develop revenue targets so that local governments will know what is coming. 1 or 2 years down the road. At this point, we haven't developed a specific policy. We intend to over the next few months.
CRA. Yes, Ripson Pushel.
Thank you. We touched on the senior citizen property tax program last time, but since then, or maybe it stemmed from a question or a comment that was raised on the implementation of regulations or the changes that were made, and since that time I've had an opportunity to review them. I'm a little concerned that the exceptions to the $150,000 valuation limit have been pretty much, as I read your regulations, turned over to localities to determine whether indeed a hardship exists. And I think, Marty, as you were aware last time, there was a big discussion about that and the concern expressed that by the former commissioner that indeed they wanted, your department wanted to take charge of those regulations to make definitions or criteria for granting hardships as an exception to the $150,000 value assessment limit, so that there was a fairness in the allocation of what we see is very limited funds available for reimbursement, so that one locality doesn't have a very lenient policy towards hardships and in essence suck up more money than they otherwise would be allocated under the pro rata formula. So I don't see that happening, and I'm hoping that in your final regs that you'll make more attempt to define that.
Yes, Representative Porcio, we did get a lot of differing input from different bodies, and we have recently kind of gone back to the drawing board, and we're looking at tightening up that hardship definition and trying to draw that more internally.
I just comment that I don't want my remarks to say, tightening it up is not necessarily the same thing as fairness. It just makes sure that there's a statewide policy that all people follow so that the allocation gets distributed fairly.
Now, this, Representative, this is a concern of ours, especially in times of recession and downturn. It seems like fairness is going to be the issue that's on everybody's mind and certainly is on my mind as governor.
With questions on any portion of community and regional affairs, Representative Rieger.
Just one question back, I think, tying into your question on grants and claims administration. I was looking in the short form, and it looks like FY86, there was a line item for grants and claims of about $1.6 million, and then the next year, $300,000, and then this year, zero. Sorry, you could explain what goes on in that line. What's being used.
Is that the organizational grants?
It's under local government assistance grants administration.
Those were grants that were added on. I believe the column you're referring to are grants that were added on to the grants section, which is an operating section as well. They were legislative add-ons, and over the years, that has been reduced, I believe, by the legislature.
Okay, just recognize that legislative. Okay, thank you.
Did we discuss those this morning?
Yeah.
Any further questions?
Representative Rieger, another thing I'd like to add with regards to the grants administration section. One thing that's that we're becoming aware of as municipalities are facing cash flow problems, any sort of financial problems they may have had are coming to light now, also as a result of the Single Audit Act. I anticipate that some of the people in this section are going to be involved with helping municipalities deal with the problems they're going to have to face as they go into the recession with less resources, also with stricter reporting requirements as a result of the Single Audit regulations. So a lot of what those people are going to be doing is assisting local communities who are facing real hardships, some of them for the first time. And here again, the hardships are a result of less money, mandatory audits, and just less administrative money.
Continue.
In dollar amount, this the add-ons represented here, and all, is that a fair statement, compared to the other grants that are administered?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? Commissioner Riesel first. Thank you. At this time, we'll take up the Office of the Governor. Mike? Mr. Hogan, how are you?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jay Hogan, Director of Budget Review, and with me is Mike Nizek, the Administrative Director for the Office of the Governor. My understanding is that the committee wishes a brief overview of the changes proposed to the Governor's Office budget. And basically, we have prepared information that we would be happy to give to the committee. And I thought I'd begin by just running down the significant changes to achieve 87 authorized, and then the significant changes we have included in the 88 request of Governor Cooper. The principal saving accomplished throughout the governor's office to achieve the 87 revised level of the budget, the one under which we're currently operating, was a pay reduction throughout the office for range 16 employees and above. And basically, commencing sometime in the last week of July of last year, all employees of the governor's office, range 16 and above, experienced a 10% reduction in pay. And that was the biggest single portion of the savings to reach 87 revised. As part of that, the use of the merit increase was suspended, and merit increases were not allowed for employees after roughly the 15th of July. Field travel and administrative travel was reduced dramatically. Efforts were made to curtail telephone use, long-distance telephone use, and fewer things were sent out to be printed, and so on. Some use of voluntary leave without pay and other types of voluntary items that allowed yet further savings. Finally, as positions became vacant, they were left vacant to help achieve the overall target. As people left jobs for one reason or another, the positions were held vacant. When it was possible, there were some reappointments, but basically, as the positions were freed up, they were re-looked at from the standpoint of holding them vacant. Contractual and professional services were reduced. This started in August, and all things that could be deferred either indefinitely or until the next fiscal year, that was done. There were a couple of positions deleted outright in the exercise. And finally, grants to coastal districts and to agencies were reduced somewhat through the Coastal Zone Management Program. That's basically how we achieved the savings that met the restricted goals throughout the Office of the Governor. With regard to the 88 budget, the one that you have before you in a request form, and I briefly mentioned this in the overview for all budgets, but it applies most heavily in the Office of the Governor. We have restored, for purposes of comparison to the rest of the budget, all salaries
to their appropriate legal level. The reason for this is to put the budget on an even frame so that the governor's office staffing cost compares to the staffing cost of other agencies. It's the feeling of the governor that during this next few months we have a significant opportunity to renegotiate virtually all of the major contractual situations regarding pay and allowances with the various unions and for the various bargaining units. Once the pattern of negotiated agreement becomes clear, then it is his position that the office of the governor should follow suit, as should the exempt and non-covered. This obviously creates a situation where, let's say, late in the process of the legislative session, a pattern is clear through negotiated agreements. It might be appropriate to, at that time, introduce a salary schedule that would reflect the overall tone of those agreements. At this time, that's simply not possible. Those agreements are just now beginning to get under discussion, but it is clear that the governor feels his office should experience the same treatment, if you will, the overall treatment of salary and benefits that appears to be the norm for state agencies. So I wanted to make that clear. This is reinstated. The 10% increase or decrease is reinstated in the 88 budget, but it is simply an exercise we have done throughout the budget so that we're talking about all salaries everywhere at the current bargaining unit negotiated rate or the current statutory rate, but they would all stand to be readjusted based on the outcome, if you will, of the collective bargaining process. We also deleted some one-time items in the 88 budget. The most significant ones are the Alaska Performing Arts for Peace Grant, which was a one-time appropriation last year, and the expenses appropriated to the Office of the Governor for the Salary Compensation Commission. At the request of the legislature, we basically transferred that function to the Legislative Affairs Agency approximately the beginning of the current calendar year. So we would be requesting no monies for either of those this year. Also deleted, every other year there is a major inclusion in the budget for the conduct of general and primary elections. Those are out of this year's budget, as the 88 budget is not a year, a fiscal year during which an election occurs. 15 permanent full-time positions are deleted throughout the budget as a whole. There is an inclusion of two new permanent full-time positions to serve as security guard. We've had two recommendations, one from the Department of Public Safety, one actually from the U.S. Treasury Service with regard to security provided for our chief executive, and under both reviews, it was pointed out that, that Alaska really did not have an acceptable level of security provided for the governor's office. We did take to heart the admonition that came out at the earlier overview that we look at security for this building and the court building, particularly during legislative sessions, since both buildings are substantially more wide open at that time of year than normal. And I would suggest that in our March revision, we would presumably work cooperatively with the legislature to see what seems to be a reasonable and adequate coverage to provide for those two buildings that house legislators and legislative committee functions. The governor is asking that the contingency fund be restored to the level of $300,000. The $150,000 level of the current year is really not much. $300,000 is not much more, but it's his feeling that at least that amount is required to cover emergency situations that are not declarable disasters, but things that seem appropriate to do. And he has requested then that $300,000 be included in his budget for that purpose. I might add that even though that appears to be a dramatic increase over the current year, the level of contingency coverage for the governor was $750,000 some 5 or 6 years ago. So it's not a an overly generous amount for unforeseen circumstances. The last two items that are of significance are transfers from both the Department of Commerce and the Department of Administration of research-related or analytical-related positions. It's the governor's feeling that he would like to have, instead of research and analysis function, for example, in Commerce, he would like to have that unit in the office of the governor so that the mission of research and analytical work could be broadened somewhat, but still available for commerce and development-oriented research and analysis as well. So envisioned in the budget would be two transfers, the larger one being from the Department of Commerce, I think that's about a half a dozen positions.
Eight positions.
And the other, a smaller one, to allow for a few positions to come from the Department of Administration. There may be more on that later. What we're looking at is augmenting the audit and management analysis function. There are some positions currently elsewhere in the state government other than the Office of the Governor that appear to be internal audit or management and analyst-related assignments. Where appropriate, it would be our thought that, these positions could better serve the state if they were in a central location and available for general internal audit and management analyst-related assignments. That basically, Mr. Chairman, is the short version of what we have proposed. And as I mentioned earlier, Mike is here to help me answer any questions you might have, and we do have a handout that goes into greater detail on each of the major items mentioned.
Representative Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jay, I was just wondering how you envision any negotiated personnel cost savings being folded into the budget process. Are the negotiations going to be done sufficiently early for us to act on those, or for the budget revision in March to reflect those, any savings?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Frank, fortunately I have nothing to do with the process of negotiated agreements, but let me tell you what I might hope might come out of it. Mm-hmm. There are two major agreements that are currently in the expired status. I think they're in a short extension period as negotiations begin. My assumption is that if a pattern of settlement appears reasonably obtainable, and that is evident before the end of the session, it would be appropriate at that time to basically offer up an amendment to the state salary schedule that would make the same general conditions applicable to the non-covered employees. I suspect, although I don't know, I suspect that that some coverage of that could be done, could be achieved without a change in the law, but it is clearly preferable and clearly simpler if there is a change in the law. So it would be my recommendation to the governor that if we have a pattern before the end of the session that is clear and it looks obtainable, that we follow up on that pattern with a revised salary schedule. And I think that would make it generally applicable throughout state government.
Thank you. That covers the what the exempt personnel or whatever. But
yes.
But then also my question is, you know, has to do with the rest of the covered or the negotiated salaries. Are they going to, how are they going to be? Are you going to submit one large budget amendment that would reflect any savings if there are some, or...
What we would require is if the administration and Jay Hogan would submit to you is the change on the front section of the budget, the boilerplate language, that would say, state that once the agreements have been reached, the savings then would be appropriated to the budget reserve fund. Right, throughout the budget. And that's the way. I'm sure you're going to submit us that language, right?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't, that's certainly a good suggestion, and I'm certain the governor would be very receptive to that idea. I must confess that we haven't exactly planned that strategy out yet.
We do have a copy of your language ready for you.
The major concern at the time, at the present time, is what will come out of these early stages. Will we get a sense of achievable direction in time to come back to you with a real good presentation on what we see the personal services cost to be?
Thank you.
Many of us have read the audit report on the Alaska's Women's Commission.
Yes, sir.
Which was submitted to us. It states that the amount for the staffing of 262,000 should be zeroed. If that's the case, would you look at incorporating or merging three things in the Office of Governor, the Human Rights Commission, EEO, and Alaska Women's Commission into one particular division, perhaps just calling it the Human Resources Commission or something? What's your plans on it, since you see they'd like to zero that one out?
Mr. Chairman, we have not specifically looked at that. We certainly would go back and take a look at it. I note that the governor did write a rather strongly supportive letter on behalf of the Women's Commission and the functions that it has fulfilled over the years. But this does not rule out our taking a look at possible other organizations. I will take that request back, and we will take a look at it and with the eye towards our March submission, if you will, of suggested amendments.
One of the things that we see also is the transfer of positions, which you have named. You know, we have eight positions leaving Commerce, which was under the Division of Economic Advocacy. We have some coming also from research from administration. You know, but we worry about the functions they have left or what they're coming over to OMB. OMB now is a large empire that sits out there with 69 employees. Now you take another 11, you're up to 80, right? But the thing about it is, if we're going to do supplementals, such as ANWR for 393,000, perhaps that instead of transferring these 11 positions from these two, maybe we should do a net zero transfer, taking the money and use it for ANWR so we can take care of the lobbying positions over in Washington, D.C., the travel into, and the two positions in D.E.C. What's your feelings on that? Because don't you feel that you have sufficient staff over there with 69 to do all the research you wanted in the state?
Mr. Chairman, I think that several years ago, I realized, Mr. Chairman, that OMB is the target of criticism from time to time among some, but quite some years ago, I'd say 3 years ago, the staff was basically 100 positions. As you point out, it's correctly 69 now. One of the casualties in that was the internal audit function. Currently, we have on board three people who are truly auditors by background and experience. The governor's desire is to increase the capability of that so that he can, through economy and efficiency type studies and through an internal audit reviews, he can stop problems before they become serious, and he can generate efficiencies in operation as appropriate and work them into his operation. He feels that he needs additional resources in that area, and that's the reason when we went through the budget process, we felt that the specific research and analytical function in Commerce, the basically economists, should come back into the Office of the Governor where they were previously located some 4 years ago or 5 years ago. That function was transferred from OMB to Commerce, and it was the governor's feeling that it was appropriate to bring them back into OMB so that they could not only continue to do research and economic evaluation that would be useful to the Department of Commerce, but that they could provide a more general support along that same line for all of state government, and at the same time bring some resources back to augment the internal audit function, which admittedly now is very, very weak.
One of the things I would like you to do is work with Representative Quarshoe, who is working on developing reappropriation policies that we can all work with.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that hopefully that we can work on supplementals by cutting the budget these last 5 months, because we are going to cut the budget here in the FY88 cycle. The other thing is, as you recall sitting there and testifying on House Bill number 696, program receipts, we were going to have in there a funding source up there, general fund / program receipts, right? None of the agencies is following that. And I have written a letter to Governor Cooper, who has it in hand, to see if we can go back and look at it. And as soon as Representative Larson, who is in budget audit, has a chance to read the letter, then I'd like to pass it out to the rest of the committee so that next Thursday and Friday they'll take each of the agencies and pick out those program receipts. And because we're getting away from cutting the budget, really. We're adding on. It's really general funds, no matter if you look at general funds or program receipts. So we're just adding another $69 million on top of Governor Cooper's 1.55 budget. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I did go over with your staff the problem we had in identifying those items in the bill. We will do that in preparation for this. The bill said that instances that were mentioned in the bill, subject to the Act, were to be called general fund program receipts. And we were unable to do that physically, technically, at the time we produced the bill, and we will be able to do that by another means. The one thing that I would caution is that we do have two competing desires here. One is to identify money that can be called general fund and used elsewhere, and the other is to make a function pay for itself. Part of the problem with treating these fund sources as though they were any other portion of the general fund, that which comes in from general taxes, is that the competing use for this, Mr. Chairman, is that this function, whatever it be, whether it is recording documents, whether it is selling fishing licenses, whatever the function is, if it can pay for itself, then it does not require support from the general fund. And then this function is carried on the backs, if you will, of the people who want the service. So I would caution that it is a two-edged sword. If we want to have agencies get from the public, recover the cost of providing this service, we want to balance carefully whether or not we want to treat that as pure general fund.
Representative Frank?
Just to comment on that, I can agree with what you're saying when it's a service, but oftentimes it's a police power that we're trying to recoup the services for, and I totally disagree with that, and I hope there's I hope you distinguish between those two kinds of situations. I don't think, for example, that somebody should have to pay for a permit that is, where it's really a police power that the permit's required by, something like that.
Representative Brown?
An example of what Representative Frank just mentioned would be in the Department of Administration, where we understand you're proposing to increase the oil and gas conservation tax, which is, a pretty small amount of money, really a nuisance tax, in order to pay for the cost of the Conservation Commission, and that is a police power type function, the regulation of the drilling. I see some real problems with program receipts. When I was in DNR, I know we, for years, worked on how to deal with the recorder's offices, and we were told it was not permissible under the Constitution, so I'm just curious to learn what's changed and why we are making a push now to go toward program receipt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In relation to program receipts, I'm sure that each and every one of us are receiving a lot of phone calls today from the various questions in relation to the recorder's offices. And, of course, the discussion that we're kind of having now is a discussion kind of that we had earlier in the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee also. How do we treat those program receipts, ongoing functions? Are they general fund monies to be given by the full legislature? And answers.
Is there any further questions? One of the things that we have, question, Brian.
I just wondered if Mr. Hogan could elaborate on the thinking about the restoration of the 10% pay, what was the 10% pay cut. It seemed to me that if the governor is indeed going to be successful in achieving savings with the other collective bargaining units, that perhaps stepping out and setting an example to emphasize the seriousness of the situation might be a good idea. I was just wondering what went into your thinking on that.
Mr. Chairman, because by budgetary means we simply cannot unilaterally do that. Part of the problem with the implementation of the freeze was the numerous legal constraints with putting it into effect. There is currently a state law establishing salaries for those people not covered in collective bargaining. If those salaries are to be changed, the law needs to be changed. To propose a certain change in the law while a collective bargaining process is just beginning is arguably probably not advisable. It is the governor's position to await the outcome of the collective bargaining process and then make his recommendations. So that's basically the thinking. He is not advocating a restoration. Technically, yes, but from a public policy standpoint, he is not advocating a restoration. He's restoring across the budget everything to what the law or collective bargaining agreements currently prescribe. He's going forward with a collective bargaining effort to try and arrive at a new series of contractual arrangements. Based on how that appears to be going, you would then be in an excellent position to come back in and say, all right, this appears to be the pattern that's developing. We would recommend under those circumstances that the non-covered employees be treated thusly. But until that process gets some returns, no one's really in a position to make that recommendation.
Gibson Frank.
Thank you. Jay, you may have already answered this question, but we're talking here about the FY88 budget. Did the governor reinstate and bring people back up in the FY87?
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Frank. This is the proposal for 88 to begin, all things being equal, on July 1st. There is no change in the salary reduction. The materials that I went through first, where we said the range 16 and above, that was in effect on July 24th, 25th. It's still in effect. It will remain in effect through the course of this fiscal year. And his proposal deals simply with the 88 budget as presented, subject to further revision at an appropriate time.
Thank you.
Further questions? Ms. Ripson Brown.
You mentioned the Alaska Performing Artists for Peace grant. What line item does that appear in?
It was in the...
I think it was under 700, I believe. Maybe not 700, 300. I don't have my notes with me, but I'm...
Maybe I'm not asking the question correctly. What budget component...
Office of the Governor, Executive Office.
Further questions? Thank you both. Representative Pershaw will be handling this particular budget. And as I said, we need to develop the reappropriation policy and also the program receipts policy shortly. So thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I leave these with the Committee Secretary?
Of course. We'll read those tonight.
Thank you.
The last one we got to cover this afternoon is the legislature. There's only really about four sections in the legislature. The first one is Budget and Audit Committee. As you know, that is chaired by Representative Larson. I will be chairing the legislative budget. I usually work with Representative Larson on this, who in turns work with Gary Wilkerson. But I'm asking if there's any questions regarding budget not at committee. I have Gary here to answer questions. Sir, any questions? Gary, Chair.
Actually, just a procedural question to the chair. Where are we on the development of that segment of the budget? I mean, I guess, Mr. Wilkerson, do you have a draft now that you then submit to the Budget Audit Committee then, or has that already been done, or where are we?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I have a draft of both the legislative audit budget and the draft of the legislative Budget Audit Committee's budget for operating expenditures. And if you'd like to pass this up.
Sure.
And then through the chair to maybe to Representative Larson, then we will be reviewing that in the LBNA committee prior to then folding that into the legislature's budget.
What we have right now and what is being presented is basically a continuation budget from last year. And then, yes, you are correct. From that, we're going to have to review our responsibilities. Of course, like everything else in state government, we're going to be asked to do more with less money. And once the committee then finishes its work, we'll make our recommendations to the four finance committees.
Any questions on audit? I think we all understand. Thank you very much. The next one we have is the Legislative Council. This year it's chaired by Senator Fehrenkamp. She works along with Warren Anicutt and Pam Stoops, who is here with us. You have the listing there. Is there any questions of Mr. Anicutt or Ms. Stoops on Legislative Council or any of those functions below? Would you state your names for the record, please?
Pam Stoops, Manager of Admin Services.
Yes, but it seemed from that presentation that the research function is, in fact, spread out in several places. I was wondering your views on combining that into a single unified group.
Well, I don't know that we do not handle research at this time other than as a budget function, Representative Brown. We assist them in meeting the budget specs, but the House pretty much runs their own research group. The Senate has the Senate Advisory Group, and there is Rural Research, which has been, I believe, downgraded a bit in this current budget. Isn't that right, ma'am? But that really is not a part of the agency.
It wouldn't be their recommendation. Their recommendation on merging those two would be a legislative suggestion. We'd have to do it to ourselves.
Can I ask you? Was research part of the Legislative Affairs Agency in the past, and at what point did it change?
I believe it was 1980 that the agency did have legislative research at one time, and then it was disbanded in, I believe it was 1980, if I'm not mistaken.
Representative Pushill?
Thank you. I think my main question was answered by reading ahead a little bit. February 10th, then you take this proposed budget to Legislative Council, and then they will debate it, make their input into it, and then, again, like the other budget, it gets folded in.
That's correct, Representative Rochelle. The Council has appointed a subcommittee of the Council to work with us on the budget, and we will have a draft budget that will be presented to the February 10th Council meeting.
Representative Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this FY88 request is your agency's request. Is that correct?
That's correct.
As opposed to the governor's request. In other words, you haven't really gone through any administrative review. Your administrative review would be the Legislative Council, basically. Is that?
Well, we've gone through a first level of administrative review, of course, for the agency budget, which is myself. With
an internal, but not an external.
But on most of the components and more than 50% of the funding, that is definitely at the direction of the Council, and of course they will oversee our budget.
Right. Mr. Chairman, could I ask to go, ask them to go through each of these just very briefly and line out where they, it looks like they made a tremendous savings all the way down the line, and I'm just, or at least in some areas, and I'm wondering if they could highlight those. I know that they did provide some of that, but it seems like it'd be beneficial to see, you know, for example, they saved $900,000. I suppose that that's a real simple answer to that, but.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that was something you could get upon yourselves. The pay cut, the first large figure there,
yeah,
on our handout. Mm-hmm. We do have a budget overview that I don't know, has that been handed out?
Yeah, I think it has.
Okay. Yeah. And we'll be glad to, if you want, we can go through that.
Well, I guess my frustration is that, you know, we'll take this home and then we'll read it and then we'll have some questions and then we won't ever bring this subject up again until next year. And that's why I was wondering if we could have an overview of it.
We'll bring it up in subcommittee.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, go ahead and ask your question while we got him here.
Well,
he's got a lot of time.
Okay, I don't have any specific questions right now unless he's going to give me an overview.
I might point out one thing, that in the FY85 budget, the agency was authorized $11,723,000. And in our FY88 request, the agency, for the operation of the agency, the request is $8,647,000, which is a 26% reduction. The major reductions there were the were changes in the public services group, where we reduced the number of months that offices were open. We did away with a division and made it a section. Another major change last year was the fact that we contracted for janitorial service. We saved basically 66%. We have not had many complaints at all on the janitorial service as yet. We also had changes in the maintenance group that maintains the building, and I think we were able to maintain it as well as it had ever been in the past. So that those are major changes. The cuts are getting tougher to make now. We really had some major reductions in data processing also. A lot of that was in the type of equipment we were using and the way that we were acquiring the equipment. Are there any questions on any of those? I'd be glad, in detail, I'd be glad to go into that.
Yes, Gripson Gulf.
Yeah, I was just curious, what was the dollar savings on janitorial?
No, it wasn't. Representative Gull, we contracted for, I believe, $56,000. And in the past, we were approximately $160,000, I believe.
So roughly $100,000, something.
Right. We had, Pam Stoops is bringing up the fact we had $403,000 in there, but that did include other items. I believe it was about, I don't think it was over 150, and we brought it down to 56.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren, on that legal problem with getting out of the lease on the Barron's building, what's the status on that?
The Attorney General's office has had that thrown out of court for the time being, and is before an administrative officer in the Department of Administration. We have had the administrative hearing, and we have not had a decision by the officer as yet. I am certain, regardless of what that decision is, it will go on to court.
Mm-hmm. How much were we supposed to save on that? Doesn't look, our lease space, let's see, office space, doesn't appear to, oh no, I'm sorry.
Well, unfortunately, that has come out of last year's budget, so we're working from a new base. We have, the figure on that was, that was about a $300,000 savings, including utilities, all building costs, all space costs.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Gripson Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That $300,000 savings, is that $300,000 they were paying for the lease down there? Because I know in order to get those people out, you had to displace people in the Capitol building, which went someplace else where you had to lease additional space. So, I mean, is that the net savings after you figuring out all those transfers?
That nets out, Representative Davis. We moved people. We had occupied space in the court building. We didn't count any displacement there. It was space that we had to rent. We had already occupied that space in the court building.
No, I mean the stuff that you had to move into another.
That's added into the. When we moved legal from the court building, I believe your question is what. When we moved legal to Court Plaza, we include that cost as an offset to the savings, yes.
What, besides that lawsuit or case, which is what, $500,000 outstanding on whether we need to pay them or not, the Barron's building, what other financial, possible liabilities do we have outstanding besides that one suit?
Well, of course we have the, there is a lawsuit, there are several lawsuits pending. A Terry Riley case that I believe has, it's hard to say with attorney fees and everything, but it's a $36,000 lawsuit, but I imagine it would easily be $100,000 if we lost all the way around. And there is another lawsuit that I don't know that there's any monetary damages involved, and that was the stopping of the clock. That has, we don't even really know if the suit's been filed, but we understand the suit is going to be filed. So I can only be vague on that.
I had a question by one of my constituents, and I don't really expect to have the answer now, but the question was, what was the remodeling cost for that was done this summer? I just need to get it at some point if I could.
That was about approximately $50,000 was the cost of the remodeling of the first floor here in the Capitol.
My one final question, and the security, the night watchmen or whatever they're called, the security that's being provided in the Capitol building, is that coming out of Legislative Affairs now?
Yes, it's coming out of, we are paying for the current security contracts out of funding that, out of savings that we have had this year in data processing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyer.
I realize that some of the questions, I've got three or four questions, and some of them may not be formulated yet, but because I'm not on the subcommittee and I know that I'll never have another opportunity, I'm going to ask them now. But I'm curious about the per diem policy during the interim, exactly what kind of a policy we're going to have there.
Okay, Representative Boyer, that has been, there is a subcommittee that has been appointed by the council, and they'll be reporting back to the February 10th council meeting. And it really, that is a vague item right now with us. We don't know how the game's going to be handled. We have no way of the cost either.
So that the number that you have in here is reflexive of something 3 years ago, or how have you arrived at that figure then?
That figure reflects session per diem and the $18.45 a month for legislators, but it does not budget for the per diem during the interim, and we looked at how the least amount of cost, and then if every legislator turned in per diem for every eligible day, 8 months worth, and it varied from $3,000 up to over $700,000. So we were hoping that some guidelines could be given and that the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House would approve per diem for legislative business, because the difference in the law is that it used to say for committee business, and a committee chairman can okay per diem for committee business, but with this other section in there that says other legislative business, that just kind of opens it.
It stops us from going back to a prior policy, because that wording was not in there before.
How about anticipation of a special session? State that in your budget.
No, we don't. That would be us. I guess at times that has been able to be carried.
It depends on the length of the special session. If it's 3 days, it could cost approximately $50,000, and I think that could be absorbed in the session expenses component. If we're looking at special session like we had last year, where it cost close to $500,000, then we have to go in for a supplemental. The session component could not handle.
And I'm curious about office space. In Fairbanks in particular, we've got people spread all over town. and we have a current lease that it's on a month-to-month basis currently in this fiscal year. So I'm curious what kind of a budget allocation you've got in, or how that reflects what the policy is or may be for office space during the interim this year.
Okay. Basically, Representative Boyer, what we are using is the same figures that we had from last year, and of a more major impact on the budget is the fact that we may also be looking at new space in Anchorage, and that should result in a reduction from what we've been able to find in the market up there. Looks like we could be very easily 20% less if we look at the same space. But what I hope to do is get a subcommittee on the council and go to work on that. And at that time, we could certainly look at the Fairbank space too.
I do think it's important to try to consolidate various offices in Fairbanks to save money and also to better to the, for access to the public. So I'm curious about that. And the last question I have, Mr. Chairman, has to do with the Compensation Commission. And I would guess that their report was due on the 10th day of the legislative session. But not sure of that, and so I'm curious where their report is, when it was due, when it's, and when we expect to have that.
You know, I know that they asked for a
extension. April 15th, I believe, and actually they, the Office of the Governor has RSA'd their money over to us, so we are paying their bills through this RSA right now, and their staff member that they have hired on contract is working out of the Anchorage LIO. Under legislative intent in that bill, it stated that Legislative Affairs would help with staff, office space, and supplies, and so we're trying to assist them, and I believe they were going to write a letter to the governor and also the speaker and the president asking them for that extension, and that they were appointed so late there was difficulty in getting their report by the deadline. In the
finally, dealing with their dollars.
Mr. Speaker, on that point, I might help represent.
He represents the House on that salary deal, if you allow it.
Thank you. Yeah, the Salary Commission is operating. They have staff, which is a... They have their office. They have written to both the President and the Speaker. The date in which they'll be making their report is...
Mr. Chairman, then my last question, and perhaps Representative Larson can best answer that. It was a large sum of dollars associated with that bill, and I was curious whether or not you anticipate turning any dollars back. It was $270,000 or $280,000.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, I believe the figure was closer to $90,000+, of which there was about $60,000 left when the committee started its work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there any more further questions? I just have an announcement to make. Is there anybody that would like to go to a teleconference on the recorder's office? It's statewide right now in room 120. So if there's anybody that would like to listen to the recorder's office telecommunications.
Chairman, I believe it starts at 3:30.
Didn't say?
3:30 to 4:30.
Okay. Great. I didn't have a time on that. Okay, no further questions? Thank you. The next one is on the list is the leadership program. The leadership is... which is also in here, it's on almost next to the last page there. I was with the speaker who puts that together and also the president of the Senate that puts it. We have the same amount of money of almost $3.7 million into the particular budget. And this is to pay for your interim staff travel to the legislature, to have your phones and your equipment. And so those are handled by the speaker and the president there. And we will. They are the two that put the budget together on that one. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, kind of relating to Representative Boyer's question, do you anticipate putting together a new policy for interim per diem?
I'm hoping that the council, when they put that, that the, both the Senate and the House would adopt the same policy.
Do you expect that to be in the form of a law? Or?
I really don't know what they have in mind yet. I'm going to wait till, I think, February 10th to see what the legislative council comes through with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The last thing we have is Ombudsman. Is there anybody here from Ombudsman?
That was good.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Elmer, were they coming today or were they with this consumer advocates in there?
Okay. Thank you very much. That completes the agenda for this afternoon. Let the record show that Richard Brown will be absent tomorrow, please. House Finance is adjourned.